live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Still not a piano player.
Still doesn't matter. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in again tonight. We're happy that you're with us, and we'd love for you to join the conversation. You can do that either on Twitter, at The Music Row Show, or on Facebook, The Music Row Show.
That's right. we got a great show for you tonight. I write this stuff out for a reason.
I don't read your stuff.
Good gravy.
You're overcome.
Yeah, he's just...
he's overwhelmed.
He is overwhelmed.
I am overwhelmed, and I'm on the radio, but I'm just letting
and
the person
know. And now you're texting,
who...
and now you're doing
No, somebody just
stuff.
Called, so I just let him know I was on the radio.
Well, in case you're tuning in for the first time, this isn't just mindless babbling. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who are just trying to figure out how to get things going here in Music City.
That's right, and it should be very clear right now that we don't have any answers.
Not even a little.
We're out slinging songs during the day just like you guys are, but we are able to find the right people, bring them into the studio, and pick their brains and give you the opportunity to ask some questions too.
Sweet! Yep, and do that on Facebook and Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Now, we've got a great show tonight. We got artist manager and publisher and licensing guru, Jim Shearer of Whizbang Incorporated. He's here with us right now.
That's right. And then we're going to have hit songwriter and recording artist Paul Jefferson in hour two.
That is awesome. So, Scott, why don't you introduce our first guest?
Our first guest is going, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I am so done with this right now.
Idiots.
Already.
hi, thanks for being here. Our first guest
are
tonight.
Are we still on the air?
Yes, yeah, well, oh, okay. Maybe. Our first guest brings over 30 years of music business experience from managing artists. He was a VP of creative at Sony, VP of A&R at Arista, owned a recording studio, and the last 14 years he's been the president of Whizbang Inc., which manages several Christian artists, licenses songs for film, TV, commercials, and video games, and also is a publisher.
Yeah.
Plus, he's very involved in the Nashville Film Festival, which I guess is just around the corner, right?
Starts this week. Sweet. So we're very excited, Thursday night.
Very exciting. If we don't learn something this hour, we aren't asking the right questions.
That is true.
So it's a pleasure to say Jim Shearer. Is it Shearer or Shearer?
Shear. Just Shear.
Why didn't we
it's
ask
perfect.
This before
oh,
we
that's
went on
fine.
The air?
Well, that's
close
kind of
enough.
Becoming our trademark, isn't it? Let's just butcher
all,
everybody's
yeah,
names.
It's all good. And
Hino
it's
and Scoot. Nice yes. to meet you. Welcome to the Music Row Show. We're glad
all
you're
right.
here.
Thank you. Woo. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So for all those budding artist managers out there, when you started in the business as an artist manager, how did you go about finding your first clients, and how do you figure out who's worth spending time on?
You know, that's a great question. The way I got started, as I have been in the business for some time, I've been at a label, I've been at a publisher and musician and studio guy, and it was kind of funny that it was just very organic. I got put together with an artist, and I just left Arista Records probably a few months before. I was still producing. I was still under contract to them as a staff producer. And met somebody and this artist, and we just was like, well, they liked me, and I liked them. And we started doing stuff together, and all of a sudden, Whizbang is born.
Uh-huh.
And then that went well with that first artist. And a year later, another artist. You just started word of mouth. And maybe that was the best way. But I think for me, in management and just advice maybe to other manager people, or if you're looking for a manager, it was great that I just had experience on the other side of the desk from the artist. You know, it sat on the label side, sat on the publisher side, studio. So I was able to give them some advice from that perspective.
Gotcha.
So you hadn't done any managing prior to that?
I had not.
Oh, that's crazy.
No. That was my first artist, a band called Super Chick out of Chicago.
Yeah.
And that went great. We were together for many, many years. I still managed the lead singer. And So it just kind of started by a relationship that became something else.
Wow. So in terms of figuring out what, if you're trying to figure out some band that you might want to manage, not in terms of figuring out if they're worth spending time and money on, is it just a gut instinct or?
It is, but it's based on some factors that are very tangible of, in a way of songs, number one.
Okay.
You know, there got to be songs that are, I feel, in my experience, they're going to knock people out, because we all know there are a lot of songs and there's more music available than there's ever been. Right. It's really got to stand out. The other thing is that there's a charisma, something about them as an artist that is, you again, that thing that you see it, you know, yeah. We've all seen those artists, we go like, wow, whenever they walk in the room, everybody's there's something special about them. Not necessarily right. like they're huge and big personality. Sometimes it's very quiet, but it's something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I think is the drive. How bad do they want to be an artist?
Yeah.
One of my old bosses, Tim Dubois, told me one time when he was a manager, he managed Vince Gill and some other artists. He said, you cannot want it more than the artist does.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't matter how bad and how great I think you can be. If you don't want it as an artist, don't have the drive and desire, because you guys know, we all know, it's not usually, you know, this month we sign you and next month you're a star.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a very long road, and you have to have the inside drive that's going to get you through those lean times to get to when it's good.
Let's talk a little more about that, because there's no shortage of talent in this town. I mean, there are great, great musicians. There are great singers. There are beautiful people.
Oh, yes.
So that's all there.
Yes.
But when you say drive, what does that mean to you? I mean, what are the things that that you actually see someone doing that you say, okay, this
right.
artist is very, very into this?
Right. I think some of it is the commitment to, one, get better at your craft. Like if you're not... Say you're not a great live performer. Maybe you're a great songwriter, but you haven't developed a live show yet. Are you willing to get in a van and go play 3-4 nights a week to 10 or 12 people a night
better.
To get better? Are you willing to put in the work to do that? By the same token, if live is your thing, or regardless, you need that. It's an important key part of earning an income in this business, is you've got to go out and build an audience. Sometimes one, you know, face-to-face. Not just off of a hit song. So again, are you willing to go in that van and go to Bowling Green this month and then go back 6 weeks later and then 6 weeks after that and hope everybody tells their friends and work social media?
Right.
Not everybody is. Some people are like, that's just a little more, you know, if somebody calls with a big check, please call me.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't know that I'm prepared to do that, because you're not going to make money. Likely you're kind of losing money throughout that process. But man, like Florida Georgia Line, those guys, man, that's how they blew it up, because they already had, I don't know how many thousands of people that already loved them, and they'd already built that audience.
Right.
And I think that's where we are in the industry too. When people get a record deal, back when I was at a label, sometimes we would sign somebody who was a great songwriter. Maybe they didn't have any of that. Now I think you almost have to come to a label like, well, I've sold 50,000 records. You know, I play 200 shows a year, 100 shows a year,
right.
Draw this many people. It's kind of the metrics. You go like, okay, what have I done on my own that proves that I am somebody worth gambling on?
Right.
You could spend $1 million on me, and at least there's some indicator that I have something about me that appeals to people.
It's like the development deals, that's gone. You have to be developed already, and they just figure they can push you over the edge.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's a publisher or a manager or just somebody on their own that is getting themselves going and started, and they're doing it. They're not waiting for somebody else to go, here's
right,
you know,
yeah.
Here's
what's
the
old Muppet
platter.
Movie thing. Oh, here's our standard rich and famous contract.
Yeah.
Now,
do you want to be really rich or obscenely rich?
Right.
Yeah, just check
this
box.
Exactly.
Right.
But you know, that doesn't exist.
Right.
You have to bring something to the table.
Yeah.
Well, let's go way back here. Let's go 30 years ago.
Yes.
When you were just getting started here in Nashville. What were your short and long-term goals? And when you
right.
came here, what is it that you wanted to do, and what has surprised you most in the past several decades?
Well, you know, it's funny. I came to and went to Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, close to here, and in the music business program. And at the time, I knew of exactly two jobs in the business. One was an artist and one was a sound engineer. And I figured, well, I'd, you know, hopefully get that sound engineer gig and maybe something else on the way. And then in my very first survey of recording class, all of a sudden there's all these other jobs I'd never heard. You know, I didn't really know. Maybe I was kind of sideways aware.
Right.
But as an 18-year-old, was like, oh, there's a publisher. And man, that's really cool what they do, and publicists and labels and all those different people at labels. And the publisher and producer thing really spoke to me. I love working in the studio. I'm a musician. I love developing talent, and then being a publisher, it just went hand in hand, especially at that time. There were a lot of big independent publishers in town, like Tom Collins,
right,
who was producing, had a stable of great writers, and was producing Barbara Mandrell and people like that. My first job in the business was for Charlie Pride, and his, Blake Meavis, who was ran the company and hired me when I was an intern, was producing George Strait at the time. And that was how publishers built up catalogs. You know, they had producers that were on staff and writers wrote, and it was all kind of very, and all that was very appealing. It was like, yeah, that's kind of the, that's the heart of what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I got started in that. So for as a long-term, short-term goal, I hope to be really successful at those things.
Right.
Never thought I would want to work at a label. It looked just like the most heinous job I could imagine because they got fired a lot.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know, it's just a different world. And it seemed so great in the publisher world. But eventually, I went to the dark side and was hired by Arista Records down the road after I'd been at Sony for a long time. But that was a different world, too, of changing from developing talent in a different way. And so that was, I guess, in the end, hopefully to work with people and help them be successful, which goes right into management or label or publisher or whatever it is.
Huh. Wow. So then fast forwarding, you do a lot of music licensing.
Right.
And that's, I think, just to both Scott and me, that's kind of a mysterious
subject.
You know, what walk us through those first few meetings in L.A. and how do you go about fact finding or what?
Right, exactly. Well, and for those people who don't know, music licensing, what that is when we license a work, a song and a recording, it's two different parts that have to be licensed to a film or a television show or a commercial or a video game, and they license the right to use that in that work. Mm-hmm. They pay a license fee, that's a flat fee, and there may be other terms. There may be a soundtrack related to that or something, home video or something like that. So getting into that world was very interesting. I was at Sony Tree Publishing, and somebody at Sony Pictures, we sat together at an NSAI dinner, actually, and we got to know each other, and she said, you know, you should come to L.A. and pitch this Nashville stuff for film and TV. And she said, if you'll come, I'll set you up for a week's worth of appointments.
Huh.
How could I turn that down?
Really?
So I went and got something licensed that very first week.
Okay.
And then that was probably 20 years ago. And then it's just been going on ever since. And so it's very relationship built. It's a kind of a small world. There's a handful of music supervisors who are doing a bulk of the work. And there are people, some internationally, but most of it's in the U.S. And we get there and pitch to them. They send us briefs. It's also something that's kind of maybe not what you expect, is nobody shows me a piece of film and says, hey, what would you put there?
Uh-huh.
They've already decided that.
They know what
they
want.
They know exactly what they want. So I have to be careful in my relationships that I'm not pitching what I'm not, what they're not asking for.
And when you say they're specific, is it they have a song like it, or they have already picked a specific song?
It's very, very, that's part of it. Part of it is sometimes like, hey, needs to sound like Happy by Pharrell.
Okay.
Or we'd love to license Happy by Pharrell, but we don't have $1 million.
Right.
But we need something with this word in it and with this feel because of
The scene that it's in.
Yeah, and sometimes the scene has already been cut. Mm-hmm. So they want it to be similar tempo. Mm-hmm. They want a certain kind of instrumentation. Sometimes they're concerned, well, is this an artist who's on the charts? Is this somebody big? Or we don't care. We just need we had a song in the movie The Blind Side.
Okay.
And they needed a hip-hop urban track that, again, they gave us some parameters. We sent it out to a couple of people who are our clients. They composed something. We pitched it, got it. But nobody would know who that was. I mean, it was not anything that wasn't what they needed. They just needed that feel to make the movie move forward in that spot.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, okay, we need to move forward with a quick break, but we're going to come back, and I want to dig a little deeper into this.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Music Row Show. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a tune called Redeemed, which was a big number one for Big Daddy Weave last year. We are here with Jim Scheer of Whiz Bang Incorporated, and I think you manage those.
I manage those guys. Yeah. Such a thrill. I mean, I love the best part if you're a manager is if you can manage your favorite band. And those guys have become my favorite band. I love those guys. I mean, they're just impeccable musicians, awesome guys. My wife knows that when I go out on the road with them, there's really kind of some business we need to do, but I'm just a geeky fan, and I just like hanging out with them. And we're best buddies, and so we love hanging out and doing stuff together and seeing the world, and it's great.
You know, but since we played that, because I know Heino was jumping out of his skin there, because we're so used to songs, you know, nowadays in pop country.
Right.
The intro's about 0.2 seconds.
Yeah, we would have been at the chorus by then.
Oh, yeah.
You have to be
halfway
at the hook,
through the song.
But in contemporary Christian, obviously, there's a little more leeway in the music.
Yeah, and that was probably the album edit. So I probably didn't send the single edit. But in there, it's kind of the same in some ways. Yeah. But there is that awkward thing of like, yeah, we're still not to vocals yet.
Did the vocalist come to the studio that day?
Somebody sent us the instrumental track.
Yay, instrumentals! So, okay, let's get back to. So, you go to L.A. Let's set the stage for people who are just joining us. Jim Scheer, Whiz Bang Incorporated. You have your first meeting in L.A. to pitch songs for licensing purposes.
Right.
Okay, what is that like? What are the first few meetings? What actually goes on in those meetings?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it is relationship building. It's different than a publisher meeting here. A lot of times when I was a publisher and somebody come in, I would play them songs, or vice versa. They would come play me songs if they were a writer. This is a little bit more meeting, like, hey, here's the kind of stuff I'm doing. Here's, you know, some stuff and parameters and things that I do a lot. Mm-hmm. And on occasion I get to play them songs, and other times it's an email world. You know, it's like, okay, I'm seeing scenes or something like that. But I was in New York a couple of weeks ago at an ad agency, and I'll take them a sampler, for instance. So I know who their clients are, and I've picked maybe 20 songs, 25 songs, which sounds like a lot, but we're only going to listen to about 10 seconds of each one, because in licensing, it's so much about the sound, the tempo.
Right.
I might play them just a little bit of a chorus. It's the hook.
Do you edit the sampler to... for a specific part of the song? Or
sometimes I do, but in this case, most everybody knows to go to 1 minute and we'll hear the chorus.
You know? Yeah.
And they'll just bump ahead. But it will trigger some things. There's some great things about that. They'll go like, for instance, I played somebody a song not knowing that they had something in mind, but they're like, wow, we've got an account in London, and this song would be great for them. Can you get me the instrumental tracks and these alternate versions, blah, blah, blah. And so we did. And that's the great thing about being in the room. You hear about things that maybe somebody doesn't email you, or you forget or something. But it's like so many things, this is such a relationship business that for me, which I love people, I'm having a great time getting to know you guys. I love to get to know those people, and I'm really genuinely interested in them as people in their lives. So we kind of do that, and then we're communicating, we're emailing a lot. But say, for instance, on my first trip, I went out with my boss, Donna Healy. Donna Healy was the president of Sony Tree Publishing, an awesome, awesome lady and great mentor. And you were sharing with me a little bit, Scott, about going to that first meeting, like, okay, now what do we do?
Yeah, you're right.
This is my first meeting. I don't know.
Yeah.
In that case, we got to do some of those things, but we also got to sit with a guy named Brandon Tartikoff, who was the newly just left NBC. He was the whiz kid of programming and Saturday
Must
Night Live
TV,
and all these things.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
That's
exactly.
Him.
And so he's independent, and unbeknownst to me, my boss Donna makes a pitch for a movie. And I have no idea, but I'm just listening. Oh, this is entertaining. And then just as she's finishing her pitch, he turns right to me, looks me in the eye, and he goes, so who do you see playing that role? And I said something like, I'm sure I came up with something, but it is one of those classic things that we were talking about, is you're kind of figuring out the game. Everybody's got a little bit of a conversational way that they do things. But that's a classic thing. Something for licensing that comes up in that kind of jargony way is, it's this song meets this song.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear this vocal with this kind of backing track. Right. Or I want it to be, I want it Pharrell's happy with a female vocal.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So those are the kind of things that we have, because often they're trying to replace their wish song.
Right, right.
You know, or the director has said, you know, that, gosh, the Rolling Stones would be great in this right. spot. And the supervisor goes, well, yeah, they sure. would yeah. if they would license music to you, but they won't. Yeah, and right. you don't have the budget. So
let me go find something similar. In the rough edits, they'll use
yes.
a song, you know, because they're not worried about licensing at that point. So they'll just stick
right.
with their favorite, and they'll probably fall in love with that over the course of a year that they're listening to yes. it and watching it. And now comes time to replace it.
Yes. That's called temp love.
Temp love.
Because that's the temp track that's playing along with the movie all this time when right. they're watching dailies.
Okay.
So there's a guy in the movie process called the music editor, or a lady, and they will go and, as just to kind of make it like the director's watching the movie, they'll just cut in whatever they feel would work in that.
Right.
And sometimes that's Led Zeppelin, or right. it's something that's
the Beatles.
Works fantastic for that scene, but it's not available.
Yeah.
And that's the temp love thing. The good thing is, for people like me, is sometimes, like, I pitch music to music editors all the time mm-hmm. because of that. And so maybe uh-huh. they'll temp in my song.
And then
and when it
stays.
Comes time, right, when it comes, and that's happened, where it's like, hey, it's time. Okay, now let's get the real song. Director's like, what real song? I love this song.
Yeah.
This is the one.
Like, right.
Well, there you go.
Well, okay.
Yes.
And it's not the Rolling Stones.
It's
so
not
it's
the Rolling Stones.
Accessible.
It might be somebody who's completely independent, and we're pretty negotiable, but they already have a fee in mind, and yeah. good for us.
Nice.
Now, can they use, is it, if a song's not available, what about a cover version of that song? Is that,
that's
a whole other thing?
That's a big part of the licensing world as well. People will say, okay, well, I want this song, but I can never afford the master, or I can't get a release from the artist to use right. that master. So, and maybe it's just more interesting to hear a cover version of a song that's not the one everybody's used to hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw American Hustle, but mm-hmm. that movie was contained a couple. There was like an Arabic version. I'm trying to remember the song, Cat Stevens or something. I mean, it was one of those where you could never have afforded the master probably anyway.
Right.
And here was this unusual version that played to the movie. It had something to do. If you see the movie, you'll see the scene. So that's a big part of it as well. We have a whole list of cover songs that our artist clients have done.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes up, you know, hopefully, for instance, right now in December, I think Christmas movie, they're coming out with a film version of Annie, the Broadway musical. Annie.
Okay.
Right.
And I just happen to have a song, a cover version of Tomorrow, which is the big song from Annie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pitching that like crazy.
Right.
You know, to anybody who's making the commercials, the trailers, anything, because that's my chance.
Yeah,
they're not going to make
sure.
any every year.
No, that's sure. not an annual thing. Right. You know, we've had song contests here on the show where, you know, we say, okay, we want you to write us a song that's this, and we give everybody a subject. And quite often we get material that fits none of yeah. that criteria. But they know we're going to love their song. No, we don't. you know, so talk about the value of a reputation of relevance as far as, you know, if they say, okay, I'm looking for Sarah McLachlan kind of
right.
singer-songwriter song about love, and you send.
Right. Yeah, in the licensing world, that's a big no-no. You can really, because time is such a factor, especially in television.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had something. I've had a request at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and it was on the air Monday night,
yeah,
where somebody said, "I need this kind of song. I need it right now." They don't have time to go through stuff that's not what they asked for.
Right.
It's a great way to burn a bridge.
Yeah, they won't listen to you next time.
No,
right?
No, they feel like, well, hey, if I tell you this and you can't figure that out, why am I going to waste my time?
Right.
So it's very important. I heard somebody on a panel say. A publisher say, the first time I get a brief, we call them a brief from somebody, the first thing I do is read it. Second thing I do is read it again, because
okay.
I want to make sure I didn't miss a detail. It's really sunk in that I'm only going to pitch them exactly what they asked for. A little
right.
different than music publishing. I always loved in music publishing, somebody may come in, an artist, and say, hey, I want stuff like this. But you could always feel good about just playing them a great song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, this is what you're looking for. I'm, you know, heads up, all clear. And if you don't want me to play it, I won't. But this is just an awesome new song that came in. And a lot of times those were the ones that
sure.
might be the one.
Right.
There was a great story from Charlie Pride days of, I think it was, I'm trying to remember who his producer was at the time, but they called Tree and said, hey, Charlie's in the studio. He needs a song. You know, just looking. We're looking for one more track. And somebody at the publisher said, oh, man, we had something to come in. Just perfect for Charlie Pride. We didn't know you guys still need a song. We'll be right over there with it. Guy hangs out the phone. He turns around to everybody in the room. It's like, okay, what do we got for Charlie Pride? And it was, is anybody going to San Antonio?
Nice.
And, but it was, you know, that's playing the game a little bit of,
yeah,
like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Everybody wants that hot, fresh new song. And
it's been in their catalog for 3 years.
Right. Yes, yes.
Right.
A little different in the life. Although, again, we were talking a little bit parameter-wise. Sometimes they want to know, it's like, well, what's going on with this artist? Mm-hmm. Is this somebody who's going to add to my film? Is it cool? Man, we had something. We lost a placement not long ago. It was with a Leo Burnett in Chicago, big ad agency. Mm-hmm. And they love this song. We're down the road. We're even exchanging paperwork on it. And somebody with the brand saw that this artist had been on The Voice.
Oh, okay.
And they decided that was not cool. That did not go in line with their brand. And so they canceled the whole thing.
Really?
And he didn't get on The Voice. He auditioned. He was on the television show being shown auditioning. They didn't pick him. Done
like
in
who's
3 minutes.
Remember that?
Who's going to remember? But that, they didn't want somebody going on YouTube and going like, oh, that's not an association with our brand that we want. So it's a very tricky game of.
Because now you're talking dealing with ad agencies, yes. Which we know is a whole different.
It's a whole
ball of snakes.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. In fact, if you are, and this is my plug for the Nashville Film Festival, if you're going to be in Nashville next, starting April 24th and going April 24, 25, 26, we are bringing in music supervisors from LA and New York, the music supervisor in-house guy for Nike. Mm-hmm. We're bringing in from Austin ad agency people, and we're going to be digging in. We've got some great panels. It's NashvilleFilmFestival.org. You can go and buy tickets to these panels. If they're not all up today, go back and check in a couple of days. But these are the industry experts who are going to dig into those very things of like, so what's that 5% that might get my song in or keep it out?
Right.
That you can tell me. And that's the things. Those are the kind of things we're going to talk about.
Very wow. Cool.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, you know, a lot of what you have as part of your website or any music a library is a searchable database where somebody right. can go in there and they can search in, you know, happy, whatever, and get a list of songs. But it occurs to me that YouTube and iTunes and, not Pandora, but Spotify, those are all searchable databases too. Are you competing with them now because people can go there and look for songs?
Those are great resources for us, actually, because, in fact, just encouragement to songwriters out there, a lot of music supervisors, one thing they always say is, like, make sure your music is on YouTube.
Okay.
Because that may be the first place I will go to search, just a lyric video. Doesn't matter. I don't need a music video. But a lot of times when they send me a link, it's a YouTube link. And it may be unbelievable the amount of music that's on YouTube.
Yeah.
So just encouragement for you guys out there. And just that's something they're looking for. It's easy.
A lyric video.
Yeah. It could even be just a shot of an album cover or something. It doesn't have to be anything fancy at all, but it's just a search, a place where you can find music. Mm-hmm. So Spotify, again, is great for us. If it's easier for me to tell somebody, hey, if you're on Spotify right now, great. Search this artist. That's one of my clients.
Sure.
Look them up, play. Boom, it's easy. So those are all, they're all extra extensions for us. That
okay.
Helps. Yeah.
So what, and something we haven't touched on is you call part of your business, what you do is being an aggregator. And what's the advantage of working with a company like yours, with WizBing,
right.
rather than flying to LA and trying to set my own meetings?
Yeah, I think the biggest part of it comes back to the relationship thing and the amount of music that there is available. I've actually had people say, supervisors say, I have all the relationships that I can maintain at this point. Mm-hmm. I do not have time for any new relationships. So what we do as an aggregator is we say, okay, we're picking the very best of the best that we can find. And when you need something, it's almost like we're working for them, this music supervisor, to say, we've cleared through thousands of songs. Here are the three that we think best work for you. So if you're an artist and what you do best is making music and writing songs and all that stuff, instead of spending a lot of money, you know, and this is over years, these relationships don't come overnight. You know, there's a trust thing that comes being built up through this. you want to find somebody like us. It's unlikely, unless you're causing a pretty big stir at radio or live or press, that you're going to get in, or you're going to get somebody's going to pick up your call.
Just because of time.
Just really, it's not anything evil or hateful.
It's not that Spielberg doesn't want to talk to me.
No, because he does.
He probably really does, Scott.
He's probably listening right now.
Are you kidding me?
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Man.
Right. So, but he's just a busy guy.
He's a busy guy.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Well. So it's really kind of a thing about time economy, time management.
Sure.
A little bit for them, and just trying to get to the best stuff fast.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right there, but we are going to definitely be back with a whole lot more of Jim Scheer of Whiz Bang Incorporated. We're going to talk more music publishing and placement here on the Music Row Show.
It's been another day when it seems like faith eludes me. Everything's been so confusing. Fear got the best of me.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. Now that's a tune called What I Know. That's on the God's tomorrow. Not Dead soundtrack.
The weight of everything.
That's really cool. And that's that right there. That's Trisha from, so from Superchick.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we've been working together for 14 years now. She's a pretty awesome lady.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Since we have, since we're playing that, talk about Superchick for a minute. And
yeah, I mean, one of the most creative groups I've ever worked with. I mean, Max Su was kind of the mad genius guy who was, you know, he would direct the videos, he would shoot the videos, edit the videos,
yeah,
produce all the albums. And
a lot of energy.
A huge amount of energy. And just a brilliant guy. I still love working with him. And as his publishing administrator, it's still a pleasure. And his licensing agent. But the great thing with Max, too, is that, and Superchick was, we've placed over 100 placements for them.
Wow.
You know, just in, from movies, TVs, ads, all kinds of stuff. They were just that music that, especially the female empowerment message, they're just so great for that. And continue to be great. We just had some couple things in a Disney movie.
And it's all really hooky, too.
It is. It's a great just, songwriters.
Yeah.
And I love
which
I love
Disney movie?
Cloud Nine was the latest one. It's a Disney Channel movie. Just of,
okay.
Yeah, I wish it was that other Disney movie called Frozen.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah. Hey, what are you going to do?
Well, so, you know, my kids actually watched the heck out of that Cloud Nine thing, though.
Yes. So we had a couple songs.
Yeah.
That was good.
Well, that's awesome. So, other than, you kind of touched on this a second ago, other than movies and,
right,
and placement, there's other people looking for music out there. What are some of the other avenues, other than film and TV, that you can get your music in?
You know, video games is one. It's a little bit more of the harder rockers kind of things it tends to be, and especially in the Madden football.
Not a lot of acoustic singer songs.
Yeah.
In,
not so much.
You know, but
in the shooter games.
Yeah. My soul.
Yeah, not so much. But that, I mean, the video games. And then also gifts, believe it or not. I mean, sometimes if you have a hot song, like we licensed Redeemed to a music box. And it's in gift stores and things like that. So there are other alternate things that happen like that. But branding, something that we're going to talk about at the festival is a little bit, is long-form videos. Brands are doing some commercial kind of things. You're only going to see them online. They're not commercials for broadcast.
But they're hoping they'll go viral.
Right. Maybe a 10-minute movie that's just something that's so compelling that you're, you know, it goes viral. It gets a million views. And it still sells the product, sells the brand in a different way, because they're trying to catch a different set of eyeballs than they would on broadcast television. Well, so it's you know, there's a lot of opportunities that we're always trying to find any kind of avenue that we can.
Now, is the whole, as a songwriter, is the whole payment structure different from that kind of thing versus TV and film?
You know, the good thing about for a songwriter when you have licensing is most of the time, you get that upfront license fee, the synchronization fee.
Okay.
So, and that can be pretty great. I mean, it can be pretty small or zero, but for network television, we could be talking $1,500 to $25,000 just for that fee. And then you get your performance income on top of that, which also can be pretty nice if that show continues to run.
Mm-hmm.
Something that maybe you might not know about that is international performance fees for television performances are generally quite a bit bigger than they are in the States.
Why
so
is that?
It's just the way those royalty structures are set up within those countries.
Well, they also have the performer royalty on radio, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a different thing there, exactly. Yeah. So sometimes when those foreign statements come in, they're quite a nice surprise, too, because if you've got some play in Sweden or somewhere where they just pay a high performance royalty rate. Hmm. So it's nice. So you can't always bank on it. In fact, if you're an artist, one thing that you need to consider is, like, does this just help get my music out? Even if I'm only getting $1,000 or $500 or whatever it is it getting, is it helping build my brand as an artist?
Right.
Is it something I can talk about? And generally, yes, especially if it's cool. If it's a director,
yeah,
or a product or something that your fans are going to identify with,
yeah,
why not?
And that does happen. Actually, it happened for me this weekend. I was playing a soundtrack on Spotify, and there was a couple songs on there that I really liked, and I went over and who was that? And I clicked on that and went to their, you know, and ended up listening to a couple albums worth of that particular artist that I'd never heard of before.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it works.
Absolutely. You know, I think one thing that I'm hoping for, you guys may remember 10 years or so ago, there used to be more movies where you go like, man, that soundtrack was epic. It, you know, wasn't just the score. It was like the songs made the movie.
Yeah.
For me, I'm Sue Jacobs, who was the music supervisor, and one of our supervisors coming to the festival, is she really did that. The music was almost a character in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, if you got to see that. Mm. Another one. Some great bands that I personally wasn't that familiar with, mostly Swedish and Scandinavian bands because of the location of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
They're awesome. That's probably the most album I've listened to most all year. And that's, I love that. I hope we're coming back to that. I think there's such a great place for artists and for movies, too, that we all remember those films where we got, man, that soundtrack was, that was such a big part of what I took away from that movie.
Let's hear that film festival website again.
It's NashvilleFilmFestival.org. And again, hope you'll join us. The music events that we're doing April 24th, 25th, 26th, we're going to be doing panels at the Regal Green Hills Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also be doing some at the Quonset Hut. If you've never been to the Quonset Hut, then it's the old CBS studios where Patsy Cline recorded Crazy and so many classic hits. We're going to be doing one of our panels in there.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of cool. It's very exciting for us to show off Nashville to all these supervisors that are coming into town. Because another thing that's changed that we probably realize is Nashville's cool.
Yeah.
You know, there used to be that maybe... Again, 10 years ago, I would call a music supervisor in L.A. and say, hey, I'm coming to L.A. Can I come see you? And they go, oh, you know, we don't need any country music today. Thank you. Like, I didn't even have any country music.
Yeah.
You know, that was just the only world that they had put us in a little slot of. Now, there's lots of stuff happening here, and people are excited to come here. And I'm pretty proud of this town. I'm not a native here, but it's my town, and I love to show it off. So
yeah, I think we all are. Let's take one last quick break. We're going to be back with more of Jim Shearer here on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
I love it. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a tune called The Whip. It's a tune called Baby Bee. Nice. Everybody's bobbing their heads in here. Nice.
Here's a trivia question. How many times has The Whip by, what's the name of the band?
Baby D.
Baby B.
Yeah.
Ever played on WSM radio?
I would count one time. One time.
You got to let
this
them know.
This is a historic night.
You got to let them know that their song played on WSM.
They are
the mother church of music.
Two awesome brothers from down around New Orleans, and they're on Universal Records, but we're fortunate to rep their first album.
Okay.
That we still get to use, and I love that song. I hope that... Glad that you guys played it. Thanks.
Well, let me add, we talked about this briefly, and we only have a few minutes, so I'm going to ask you a couple. We're going to ask you some quick shot questions. When you're dealing with music supervisors and libraries and stuff, and you're the writer or the performer, do they want your CD?
They generally do not. I mean, they would love to get a link from you, but physical product is pretty much dead. I know of about two supervisors who actually like to have physical product, and everybody else says, send me a link. And that's me too.
So I mean, they don't even want an attached file. They don't want that.
No, no, no.
Do not clog up my inbox with 8 megabyte files.
Absolutely. So send a link. Use Box.com, Hightail. I'm sure there's some other good ones.
SoundCloud, I heard. Is
SoundCloud's good. You can scan through that. And I like that fine. I think that some people use that for sure.
So Dropbox. So let me clarify. The link, is it a link to download the file or a link where they can just stream it?
Most are both. You really want to use one that's both, because if I have to take the time, and I'm me Again, or a supervisor, if I'm a supervisor, forgive me, if I'm a supervisor and I have to download it first, I may think about that. I may go to the link that I can stream and then decide if I want to download it. I'm not clogging up. You know, you can imagine if you get, I'm sure they get 20, 30,000 songs a year.
Oh, my gosh.
And you can think of the hard drive space you would need to hold all those songs. Mm-hmm. So send something. And for me, too, it's great because I can stream it on my phone. If you send me a link, I just stream it right here on my phone and I'll know and I can get right back to you. That's the way to go for sure. We were talking about trying to identify yourself a little bit. That's hard. We take out the album art. We take out all that cool stuff.
Right.
But somehow we'll figure out how to get that back in it, but not with physical products.
So
right
then
now.
what are the sites that are being used by the supervisors?
I would check out Dropbox.
Dropbox. Yep.
Box.com. And Hightail, which is formerly You Send It.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yes. So they've changed their name to Hightail for some reason. So,
because nobody was using YouSendIt.
I don't know. but those are the three main ones that I see. I do know a lot of people. I do get SoundCloud links. And I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's all good. But those are the ones you can definitely stream and download. You've got the option.
Okay. Biggest challenges now is just getting heard. You were saying that during the break.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's a big one. Yeah, I mean, there's so much music. I can never remember a time when there was this much good-sounding music right now. I mean, it used to be an indie record, sounded like an indie record. You couldn't afford to rent a big studio, but now the recording gear is great.
It really is.
Now the challenge is to how do you stand out? One is you got to have a great song. You got to make it sound great. It has to be special. And you got to have something about yourself more. Sometimes if you want to maybe send me something or a supervisor, it's like, sometimes just that little thing of like, hey, we've been out on tour with the Lumineers, or we played 4 shows with the Lumineers. That guy, that's a real story.
Or I went to a Lumineers.
I heard the Lumineers on the radio yesterday. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But we actually work with a group. It's like they're kind of one of their first signs. Like, we just played 6 dates with the Lumineers. Blah blah. It's like, oh, okay. Well,
I'll listen to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely would listen to that.
But I'm imagining it's actually kind of cool that in that line of your world, artist image and all that stuff doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're good looking or whatever. It's the song that matters.
90% of the time, that's for sure.
Because they're not seeing the artist.
No. On the rare occasion, we do get a chance to pitch for an on-camera performance.
Right.
Like Army Wives used to have some on-camera performances. Very rare. That's a small percentage of the time. Yeah. So mostly just need a great song. But more and more, there's a lot of fake bands.
Yeah.
The licensing world's like, okay, well, we're going to write some stuff, but we really don't tour. We're really not a band, but we're going to put a band name on it.
Yeah,
right.
That's getting harder to do. Now it's like, what are you bringing to my brand? What are you bringing to my movie? You know, do you have fans?
Gotcha. Man, well, thank you so much for coming and spending an hour with us.
Guys,
we've had a great time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Everybody go to whizbangincorporated.com, Whizbang Inc., and
Whizbang-Inc.
Whizbang.
Nashville Film Festival.org.
Perfect. There you go. Well, thanks again. We got another great hour of the show coming up. We got hit songwriter Paul Jefferson joining us. So come back in just a few minutes for that.